They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Joining me today on the Commons is Jessica Suico. Did I say that correctly?
Yes, you did.
All right. Jessica is a student at the Contra Costa College in San Pablo, California. She is a staff writer on the student newspaper called The Advocate. And she's going to tell us a little bit about the paper. And then we're going to talk about a very good article that she wrote. So, Jessica, first of all, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. So pretty much this is my second semester at Contra Costa College. It's my second semester with the school newspaper, The Advocate. And we're number one in the state of California. Yay. We've been number one for the past 20 years. We're basically the student voice at our school. We try to get the students on campus's opinions and voice heard about problems going on in the East Bay, going on campus, or positive things going on campus, like activities, conventions, workshops, new classes, new buildings getting put on campus, stuff like that. We're a weekly paper. We come out every Wednesday by 9 a.m. We get the paper out, and we just make sure we have a website, too. And we also have Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You can follow us at Accent Advocate on Facebook, CC Advocate on Instagram, Accent Advocate on Twitter. We also are on YouTube as Accent Advocate and Snapchat at CCC Advocate.
Wow.
So, yeah, we're pretty big. We're probably the biggest paper in the Bay Area for community colleges. But I really love it. I love the staff. It's like a family there. We really care about our community, our school, our people, and the people in our staff. And we just really just want to make it known and people's voice out there and just get the community involved with everybody and just see where we can go with that.
Jessica, tell me, what are you studying? Are you studying to be a journalist?
Yes, I'm studying journalism. Okay. I went in actually last fall as a music production major, but I also applied for the journalism courses too for news production, and I fell in love with it. I just fell in love with just talking to people, getting people's voices out there, getting people's feedback and opinion, and also I'm able to get my voice out there in a way too with the paper and stuff. So it really has grown in my heart. It's like a passion more than work to me.
Because I can sense the passion that's coming through. And when you talk about what you're doing, it's glowing. I mean, there's a fire there. And that's good. And that's good. That's why I asked it. But, you know, when you talked about the types of stories that you wrote, the types of articles that you solicited, it was sort of what's going on and all of the local activities, which one would normally expect in a college newspaper. and reaching out. But you've taken it a step beyond, and you've taken it to something that's near and dear to my heart now, with housing. And you wrote an article called Illegal Evictions Harm Families, Neighborhoods. What gave you the idea? And don't get me wrong, I think it is so important for students to start understanding what's going on in the real world, and this is something that's really harming people. So kudos to you for reaching out and talking about it.
Yeah, so the reason for my article is because my mother and aunt were living in an HOA over here in El Cerrito, California, called Mira Villa Vista HOA. And they took over the rental agreement from my aunt's best friend because she was moving to Florida. So they did all the legal documentation, all the paperwork and everything. And they even knew my mom suffered from bipolar disorder and anxiety. So they moved in, and they instantly, like the first week they moved in, they started getting harassed and stalked by the HOA, getting asked very inappropriate questions on who lives in the unit, what goes on in the unit, because they, my mom and aunt had brought in roommates too to live there, some friends. And they were, unfortunately, they were African American, and they were getting, unfortunately, racially profiled by the HOA, just getting asked very inappropriate racial questions and why are there so many people coming out of their unit. And that's none of really their business. So my mom and my aunt started calling the owner, Peter Quayle, of the unit and writing letters. And he started refusing the letters, ignoring the phone calls. Then they went to the property management, Access Property Management in El Cerrito, and they went there face to face, told them all the harassment. They totally ignored my mom and aunt's complaints to them. And a week later, after my mom and aunt put all their letters and calls in face to face to property management, they got an eviction notice on their door with no court stamp. So they went to the courts about four times in front of a judge at Richmond Superior Court, in front of Terry Davis was the judge's name. And my mom had all documentation showing they were being illegally evicted. And after the first court hearing, my mom had a mental breakdown from all the stress and harassment, and the ambulance had to come and haul her away. And then after that one, there was a second eviction notice. So there was just an eviction notice on top of an eviction notice on top of an eviction notice. There was about four eviction notices until they got a court-stamped eviction notice. And my mom and aunt had all the paperwork and everything showing to the judge. And unfortunately, Peter Quayle, he had a pretty okay attorney, I guess. Well, she won him the case. Her name was Ann Batten Rogers. And she pretty much lied and tried to say my mom and aunt did not pay rent, and they had receipts and documents showing they did pay rent for the first 2 months they were living there legally. And then they showed that my mom wrote letters to the owner showing that my mom and aunt tried to pay rent three times and they refused the rent. So my mom and aunt had a bunch of documents for the courts, and they still got ruled against, and they got evicted within they didn't even get a 30 day after that. They only got about 2 weeks to get out of the place, and then after that they were homeless for about a month.
So let me ask you, was this a condominium or an apartment?
It was a condominium.
And who was evicting them?
Basically, Access Property Management, the property managers of the unit.
But they're not, the contract, the rental agreement was between the owner.
Yeah, between the owner and the property management. over here in the Miravilla Vista, the way they had their HOA and their property management was kind of confusing, and it wasn't organized the way an HOA should be organized. They had, for every unit, they had separate property management managing the unit. So for Peter Quayle's unit, he had Access Property Management
managing it.
He didn't handle any paperwork with my mom or aunt. All the paperwork was handled with property management.
Okay, so it was his property manager. Okay, all right. That was a little bit on the confusing side. You talk
Sorry.
About the laws. You talk about the federal fair housing laws and the ADA,
yes.
And you also talk about the laws in California. Are you aware that you can file a complaint with HUD?
Yes.
And was that ever done?
Wait, what?
Was that ever done? Did
Yes. My mom, she called Fair Housing of Contra Costa County, and they basically just gave her a bunch of numbers in a roundabout. So she was calling a bunch of numbers, and they kept saying, well, I don't think that's coverable. Here's another number. They'll probably help you. She was on the phone for about 3 months with Fair Housing and ADA, and she was just giving a bunch of numbers and circles. She even tried to get attorneys, and even attorneys refused to help her. They said that I don't think that's a strong enough case for me to take. I don't want to risk me losing the case, so I'm sorry, we cannot take the case. That was about 3 or 4 attorneys she went through over here in the Contra Costa County.
Through the county. I'm glad you told me that.
Yeah.
I'm glad you told me that, because there's some, you know, that's one law that the federal government does enforce, supposedly. And I don't think they've been doing a particularly brilliant job of it. And that's something that we need to bring to their attention. Because
yes, definitely.
If there is a law, and if people are being harassed and abused, then they really need to get on the case and make sure that the laws are not being violated. I mean, they investigate to determine whether or not it's being done, because if it's discriminatory. And it sounds like they were on, you know, they were in several protected classes.
Yeah.
Were they elderly?
Yeah.
They were handicapped, and, you know, all of these things. By the way, Jessica, there's a Dr. Gary Solomon, who's been on the show a number of times, who's written an e-book. It's called, if you Google it, HOA Crisis in America, HOA:Crisis in America. And
okay.
He talks about it's a brilliant book. And
okay.
He talks about the cause of stress on your health. And it sounds like this is the two ladies you talk about are your mother and your aunt, right?
Yes.
In your article. So that's where you came up with the facts, the data in the case. It's not something that you pulled out of the court records.
Yeah, this is complete. I pretty much observed and watched my mom and aunt go through this whole experience. That's why it took me to my heart that I needed to write this article, because the fact that they went through so much stress and harassment and there was no help for them whatsoever with ADA or fair housing or attorneys or anything, it's just mind-boggling to me when the Bay Area, I thought, my mom told me this is the 5th richest city in our country. So when I heard my mom and seen my mom going through that and seen she had a mental breakdown because of stress from an HOA stalking and harassing her, and there was no help, I knew I had to get this out there and the voice heard, because I know that it's not just over here that's happening. It's happening everywhere across the country, like so many wrongful things against disabled people and owners of homes and renters and HOAs. I just don't understand it.
And welcome to the club. We don't understand it either, and I've been doing this for almost 30 years. So why it happens, I don't know. That it happens, I do know.
Yes.
And I'm really pleased. I've always been concerned about young people because my generation, we did not grow up in these things. So we can remember and we know what it's like to live in a free country.
Yes.
This is a fourth layer of government. This is another layer telling you who, what to do and when to do it and how high to jump and all of that. But kids growing up now grew up in an association. They grew up watching their parents go through what your mother and your aunt went through.
Yeah.
And it's always concerned me that they're going to think this is normal and just accept it. This is not normal, which is why I was so excited when I saw your article and was so excited to see that a young person is sounding the alarm of what's going on.
Yeah.
And your title is Illegal Evictions Harm Families, and that's pretty much what you talked about. But it also harms neighborhoods. Why do you say that? I mean, I agree with you, but we haven't explored that bit yet. How does that affect neighborhoods? You want to tell us?
Yeah, so the reason why I believe it harms family neighborhoods is because it puts a strain on the community in the neighborhood. Not everybody it can be trusted, and you feel uncomfortable. And if people are stalking and harassing people in that community, people aren't going to want to associate. So it's just going to be everybody just living in their dwelling or unit or their common space with no interaction with their community. And that's not how a community is supposed to be. A community is supposed to be coming together as one to help each other. It's supposed to be togetherness as one. And that I've noticed that communities are detouring away from that. They're just going and they're staying in their individual families and their individual homes. And they're just blocking out the community because everybody, it seems like nowadays, are so prone to either being judgmental, they're being just rude, they don't know how to be nice or use common sense when it comes to interacting with people. And I feel that it harms family neighborhoods when, say, you have kids living in the neighborhood and they're playing outside and you got other people coming around and they don't protect or look out or think of, oh, there's kids right there, I need to be safe or cautious. They just, nowadays I've noticed with people, they don't really want to even interact with other people. It's like a chore for them. And I feel if people started coming together as a community and talking to one another and getting to know each other, then we won't have such an individual community. It's called a community for a reason, and we should be a community.
It's called a community because they want to hoodwink you into believing it is a community. But I have to, congratulations, for someone who's just starting out in life, you have made some absolutely brilliant observations, especially in terms of what goes on. I'm going to interject one word here to help you maybe lead you on the way. And I really hope that you do some research on this, especially if you're going to become a journalist.
Yes.
And look into it. But fear. If you look at what happened to your mother and your aunt and the fear they must have felt, just having the entire world against them, which in essence is what happens. So they try to hide, and the fear doesn't help a whole lot. The fear sort of makes them a little more submissive.
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, did you notice that?
Yeah, I've because my mom, she's kind of an older woman. She's you know, she was back in the time when, you know, everybody was back in the community, families looked out for other families, and she's taught me really well to just watch for your surroundings, observe, and just listen and use your common sense. And that's why I believe I love journalism so much, is because it's a passion, and I see that that's what you have to do when you're a journalist. You have to watch, you have to observe, you have to use common sense. And it also, it gets people's voices out there, and that's what I love. I love people's voices being heard. When there is something wrong going on, it needs to be approached and it needs to be talked about. And it's not saying that everything is negative and everything's wrong. There's positive things out there in the world and positive things going on. But it, like I said, in today's society, I feel most people focus on the negative than the positive, and that's why I feel the communities are gradually just individualizing themselves and not coming together, because they're too focused on what negative is going on instead of what positive is going on and what they could make positive.
I think what happens is you have people who are being targeted by
yes.
the association, or targeted by their neighbors or whatever. And there's usually a campaign of fear and hatred that's spread. All of a sudden, the association will tell these people, or tell the neighbors, that these people are bad and they've done this and they've done that. And they'll basically lie about it.
Yeah.
So the neighbors then isolate themselves from these people because they don't want to be touched by that. Some of them will send private messages or little notes. They won't be seen
yes.
talking to them, but they'll say, "We support you, hang in there." But they're not going to say anything for fear of being targeted by the HOA. So it's
yes.
a vicious cycle. It just keeps going around and around and around. And whoever happens to be in the crosshairs of the HOA is pretty much
yes.
standing there alone, even though a lot of the neighbors agree with them, and even though a lot of the neighbors would support them if it weren't for the fear factor that's involved. And so these people find themselves alone, and the stress of that puts them in the hospital, just like your mother.
Yes, that is correct. It's funny you say how they send private messages and stuff like that. My aunt, she dealt with that from their next door neighbor, David Indery. They were actually good friends when they first moved in. They used to play game night every Friday night. And then once my mom and aunt took over the lease, he started pretty much stalking us, coming up on our door, knocking on our door, asking us questions, asking our roommates questions as they left to go to work. He would send private messages through a messenger on Facebook to my aunt saying, "Can you please move your car out of guest parking?" Because they had guest parking in front of their dwelling unit. It wasn't for the renters. It was just for guests. And sometimes my mom, when she would go grocery shopping or whatever, she would park there to unload her groceries, and her car would be parked there for like 10 minutes. And then she would go and park it back on the street. Well, every time my mom would do that, the car would only be there a couple minutes, and he would be on the door or messaging my aunt to tell her to move my mom's car. And that's harassment when you're paying rent at a dwelling or unit or common space, and you're just trying to unload your groceries into your house. You shouldn't have to worry about, "Oh, I'm parking in front of my house to unload my groceries. I can't do that." So that they dealt with that too. And they also got that he actually walked into their house one time, just barged in, and it was 5 a.m. because the roommates living there, they worked pretty early in the morning. They left really early. So they would have their car ready to go in the front of the unit to leave. And he walked in at 5 a.m. one time and yelled at them. It, like, he used pretty foul language too and told them to move their car. And that, after that, that's when my mom and aunt really started calling and writing letters to the owner about the harassment going on.
And this guy just suddenly turned on them. They were friends before, and he then turned on them?
Yeah, he turned on them literally like a month after they signed the rental agreement. He stopped inviting them over for game night. He was really weird when they would see them out in the front. Like, my mom and aunt used to always say, hey, hi, you know, create a conversation if, you know, he's seen them outside. And he stopped, you know, pretty much saying hi to them, and just really weird, awkward and harassment from him after they signed the rental. And they were just mind boggled from all of it. They didn't understand it at all.
Was he on the board?
Yes, he was on the board. Okay. And he was also a gardener there too.
Oh, he worked there?
Yeah.
And he got paid, and he's a board member.
Yes.
You, in your article, you write about both the federal fair housing and the ADA laws and the state statutes of the same state statutes, because every state has their own that's at least as strong as the federal, and a lot of states have additional protected groups. So you said that that your mother and your aunt filed complaints with HUD. Did they also go to the state? Was there any interaction with the state of California in terms of enforcing their laws?
No, they did not. I've never even thought of going to the state of California. I've never even thought of telling them to go to the state, because this was all new to them. They've never even dealt with an eviction. So that's why they were pretty much guinea pigs in this whole situation. And I was trying to do my part with my advocate and trying to get information. And they pretty much said, well, look up ADA and fair housing laws. And that's why I did that, and I put it in my story. But I don't think they ever went to the state of California. And now that I think of that, maybe they should have, or maybe they still can, because I know my aunt, I've been talking to her, and she told me she's still handling this, and she wants to still get attorneys for this, because my aunt, she's actually been through, three lawsuits, and won them with medical reasons from doctors and hospitals. So she's pretty familiar with lawsuits and attorneys and stuff like that. But unfortunately, with this situation, when they called attorneys in Fair Housing and ADA of Contra Costa County, none of them wanted to get on board with them, and none of them wanted to take their case, and they just kept giving them a bunch of numbers. And what I don't understand about Fair Housing and ADA of Contra Costa County or California, when they called them, why they didn't give them the number to the state of California.
I don't know, and I'm not sure how it works in California. Every state is different. But here's what's supposed to happen, Jessica.
Okay.
What's supposed to happen is you file a complaint with HUD, through HUD. It can be HUD in Washington, D.C., although that's probably not, that's probably not the best way to go about it. But they also have agencies, some are private, some are government agencies, and they will take that on. They will investigate any complaint. They're supposed to investigate any complaint. They're supposed to look into it. They're supposed to investigate the allegations. While the investigation is going, if they think on the face of it that, yes, there is reason to believe that this is a fair housing or an ADA violation, what they will do is they'll notify the people, and everything has got to stop at that point.
Okay.
Everything has got to stop at that point while the investigation is ongoing.
Oh.
And if it doesn't stop, you file another complaint that, you know, okay, what, they're still doing this. Now, if the inspectors who are doing the investigation determine that, in fact, there is a violation, they will take it to court with their attorneys who are well-versed in this.
Oh.
And they know what's going on. So it doesn't, you know, you don't, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to bring this out again on the show, because so many people out there don't realize it and don't understand what, you know, what's available to them and what rights they do have. So while the investigation's going on, it's hands off. Nobody can say and or do anything. If somebody does, then you file a second complaint that, wait a minute, they are not abiding by the law. They're sending me letters. They're threatening me. They're whatever it is they're doing.
Yeah.
At that point, there can be some pretty hefty fines filed against these people. But again, okay, it's not, you know, this once HUD or once an agency accepts the complaint, you don't have to pretty much do anything except let them get on with it. It's going to take forever and a day because they're slower than slow. But while the investigation is going on, you should be left alone. And if you're not, go back and file it. File another complaint and say, hey, wait a minute. Okay. I'm not being left alone. Here's what's happening.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. I'm actually going to probably call my mom and call my aunt and tell them that information you just told me and see if maybe possibly doing that will maybe change the tables or do something and get them justice and get them their rights, because their rights were totally violated and they were evicted from the place. They no longer live there. And now my mom had to suffer being homeless for a month. And now she lives, luckily she got a place, but she had to go through all that being mentally ill and disabled. So I'm definitely going to bring that to their attention because they do want to get justice in this situation.
I would recommend, and I don't know how appropriate this is for students or for, you know, for your newsletter, The Advocate.
Okay.
But I would recommend that you do some research on this and that you write about it and you put on these follow-up articles, because start educating your fellow students now.
Yeah.
So that if they have someone in their family, or if they know someone who's going through this, they'll know what to do. They'll have some inkling of where to go, because that's one of the biggest problems is people face these things and they have no idea what rights they have. They have no idea who to turn to. They have no idea where to go or how to deal with it or how to protect themselves. So if the students, if you put a little bit of a kernel of something in there, you know, back in there, when the time comes, if the time comes, they will be able to reach back in their mind someplace and say, you know what, I remember something about this. I remember reading something about it.
Yeah, definitely.
And they will know where to go and how to handle it. But this bullying and this harassment has absolutely got to stop.
Yes. Yes, I agree.
And
because it can honestly, it can kill somebody with a mental disorder or disability. If they harass and stalk somebody so much to the point of getting mentally ill and having to be hospitalized, that is a scary situation that HOAs and people need to realize that what harassment and stalking and just what that can do to somebody, especially. Yeah, it needs to stop.
No, I agree it needs to stop, and people need to know. And education is so important, which is why I do the show. And
yes.
But you've got a whole new audience there, Jessica. You've got the ability to set these kids on the right track and give them that information. There are a tremendous amount of lies when it comes to HOAs. They don't protect property values. They don't, as you have so eloquently said, they do not create a sense of community. In fact, they kill any sense of community that there might have been.
Yes.
And you're right. I don't like calling them communities, but you see, these are the words. Words have meaning. So when you use words, community, it sounds like there's something. People are happy and it's a community. People have something in common.
Yeah.
When in fact they really don't. But that's one of that. We've done a number of shows on that, on perhaps changing the words we use to describe this, to describe HOAs. They don't like communities. They don't, you know, they don't like the word association, because it's got it's got sort of a benevolent connotation to it. It's like, oh, we're associated, you know, we're friends, we're in a community, right? And the fact is that it's not the way it works. It's not the way it works at all.
Yep.
So tell me, have you got a lot of feedback on your article?
Yes, I actually have. Another lady, Cynthia Steffens, she's another HOA person.
Yeah, I know
her. She replied back to me, and now I have subscribed to her Facebook page, and she emails me almost every day something new going on in either Pennsylvania, on that side of the country, with just HOAs. It's a big help with a lot of information she sends me. So we are connected, and then you. But that's pretty much the only feedback I've really gotten so far on this article. But I'm just glad and happy I got feedback at all.
What about the students? Have any of the students reached out to you?
No, not any students yet. And I'm wondering and thinking if at my college, because I notice people at my college, the students are, a lot of students are to themselves, and it seems they're kind of scared to reach out to people. So I'm wondering if there is students on my campus that have read my article and that are familiar with it, but are scared to approach me or approach my email or something, because that's what I've noticed a lot on my college campus. There is a lot of outgoing, very open people, don't get me wrong, but I see a lot of enclosed, it's almost like they're scared to open up to people, because I do the campus comments too every week there, and that's where I have to go get 6 people on my campus and ask them a question and get their feedback on, you know, whatever the topic is in that paper that week. And a lot of people don't even want to talk to me. It's like they are really shy.
Oh, really?
And I just let them know, like, it's okay. There's nothing to be shy about. You know, I'm just here to get your input, and you'll be in the paper. And I don't know. It's like a lot of people are very shy nowadays to even opening up or getting their voice out there.
So you're supposed to walk around and talk to people and get 6 comments to put in the paper.
Yeah.
Is there a particular topic that will sort of get more people commenting? Maybe a party or a St. Patrick's Day parade, as opposed to, say, something like the article you wrote, illegal evictions?
Yeah, like, for instance, my campus comment in the paper of my article was, how do you feel about women breastfeeding in public? Because we had a whole segment about breastfeeding in public and women's rights and women's, because it was, you know, it's been Women's Month or Women's Week and stuff like that. So I get pretty good feedback from very interesting, intriguing questions. But when they're like complex or they don't know what the question really entails on what I'm asking, they kind of like shut down and they don't want to do it. And then I'll have to explain what the question is, and they still, they're kind of like, oh, I don't know. So, yeah, I do think it depends on the question and just how intriguing the question is and if it's interesting enough for people to want to answer it.
So breastfeeding on campus is good, or in public is good, but being evicted is not.
Yeah, so... That's why I'm thinking I'm going to bring it to the advocate about this, the radio show, and what you recommended me to do is do a research article on it and bring, put it in the paper as just a, basically an informational article about HOAs and illegal evictions and evictions for people. And I'm going to see, because I'm the one that runs the campus comments pretty much and comes up with the questions. So I'm going to ask my editor-in-chief if she'll be willing to go in on me with me on doing an eviction campus comment and seeing how many people want to answer the question and what type of answers we get back.
You know what would be interesting is finding out how many people live in an HOA.
Yes.
How many of the kids in on the campus grew up in an HOA or actually live in an HOA, and what their thoughts are about it. Do they like them? If so, what do they like about them? If not, why don't they like them? What don't they like about them?
That's a good question right there.
And because if you're going to be out there talking to them, you know, it's good to find out what's going on. I did. I talked to you a moment ago about Dr. Gary Solomon, and he is now retired, but when I had him on the air once, he was in his classroom. He was a college professor, and he wanted his students to get a sense of what was going on out there. So we did the show in class.
Oh, wow.
And so I was here in my studio, and he was there on a speakerphone, and I got to talk to the entire class, and I got to interview him at the same time. And I wanted to know how many people in the class grew up in an HOA, and it was interesting to hear so many of the, you know, so many of the students sort of apparently, I mean, I couldn't see them, they'd raise their hands, and they had comments. They wanted to talk about it.
Oh, wow.
So it depends on how I think it's presented. And if you're asking them for their input, I mean, you may want to reach out to them and do a whole story on their feedback, the good, the bad, and the super ugly.
Yeah. That's a really good idea. I'm definitely going to bring that to my editor-in-chief today, because I'm going to be going into the advocate today after the radio show. So I'll definitely bring that to my editor-in-chief's attention, because we don't have a paper this week because we are going to a JACC convention the end of this week. But we have a 16-pager coming out next week. So I'm going to talk to her and see if possibly I could get it in that paper or in the week after's paper.
That sounds great.
Yes.
So how many pages is it usually?
It's normally, every week it's normally an 8 to 12 pager.
Okay.
We, once a month we try to have at least a 16 to 18 pager. Because 16 and 18 pagers are very big papers, and it's a lot of work on our staff and especially the editors. So we try to not make it so stressful in there. So that's why we mostly do 8 pagers or 12 pagers.
And how many people do you have on the staff? I mean, I noticed that you're an advocate staff, but you're also a student. Is it entirely run by students?
It's pretty much entirely ran by students. Our professor, Paul DeBolt, he pretty much just gives us advice, and if he needs to critique us on certain things, he does. But pretty much it's all student ran, and our editor-in-chief is pretty much the one that gives us the stories and the assignments. We also put in assignment ideas. We have beat sheets. They're called beat sheets. They're story ideas. And we basically just write down a story idea, what's going on in the East Bay or what's going on campus. We turn it into our editor-in-chief. She'll look at it, and she'll decide if it's story-worthy, and then she'll assign it to either the person that put in the sheet, or she'll assign it to a student in the staff to work on the story that she feels comfortable that will do the story and be confident doing the story.
So what kind of stories do you mostly have? I mean, this is kind of unusual. Your story is a little unusual for a college paper, I would think.
Yeah, that's what I brought it to her attention, and she had to think on it, and she told me if I could get all the information and some sources, she would definitely run it, because they knew about what was going on with my mom and everything, so they knew I wanted to have it published. So the editor who edited it, Rob Clinton, he did a fantastic job editing it and made it so crisp so it could go into the paper and sound more informational, not sound so like I was, you know, whining or anything like that. He wanted to put it more informational, and that's what he did. Most of the articles we have in our paper are mainly opinion pieces, informational pieces on what's going on campus, like workshops, new classes, what's going on with buildings or professors or, you know, students. Also, we have a sports section, so we talk about our baseball team and our football team and our soccer team. And then we get our student voice in there by the campus comments that I do. It's six people that I have to go out and find and ask a question and take a picture of every week, and they get their comment in the paper. So they have their student voice in there. And then pretty much like what goes on if they're like, for instance, there was our gymnasium roof was leaking and it damaged the floor. So Dylan Culliner, he wrote a very good article on that. And basically just what's going on campus and what could be improved or what is improved, what positive things are going on campus or even negative things. Like there was, for instance, an incident sparks false ice sighting. There was a fight that happened on campus a couple weeks ago, and somebody ran into our Knox Building Center drunk driving on our campus about a couple weeks ago. So it's pretty much all that what goes on campus. We always have a journalist somewhere on campus taking pictures, listening, observing, writing notes on what's going on with students so we can get story ideas and get it in the paper and so it can get known. And that's pretty much what our paper covers, is just the campus and the East Bay and just what's going on with students. And yeah, that's pretty much, it's more of an informational paper than anything.
Well, I'm impressed with your, excuse me, I'm impressed with your article, and I'm impressed with the fact that the paper actually allowed you to do that, which I think is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Because it's nice to know what's happening with your classmates and, you know, whether the roof is still leaking or not. But this is real life, and this is what people are going to be facing when they graduate and move on, and they're going to have to live someplace. And unfortunately, with all of the mandates, municipal mandates, just about everything that's built now is built in an HOA. So you're going to have some busybody who's going to be living next door, just like your next door neighbor there, who's going to be able to barge in on you and tell you what's going on and, you know, what you should do and how you should do it, and that you're wearing the wrong clothes and you're not supposed to wear flip-flops because, you know, he doesn't like to see it. You're giggling, but this sort of thing happens all the time. You're wearing You're wearing flip-flops, and I don't like seeing bare feet. So please put shoes on next time you go.
I know. It's crazy, but it is real. It's true. It does happen, but it's the reason why I'm laughing about it is, why is it even happening? It shouldn't even be happening.
You know why it's happening, Jessica? Yeah. Because when you give people power, unfettered power, they don't know how to use it.
Yeah.
They are bound to abuse it. And so these people who've never had an iota of power in their lives don't know what to do with it.
Yep.
It's either gone to their heads or they're taking their jobs way too seriously. They're making life miserable. I want to know. So you said your mom's got a new place to live. So she's out of the hospital, yes?
Yes, she's out of the hospital. She's been out of the hospital since about September of last year. She was only in there for about 2 months. But it was 2 months she needed to take a break, and she really realized what she needed to do to take care of herself. And she realized that living in that type of environment wasn't healthy for her. So she did fight and try to keep the place, but unfortunately she didn't. So she pretty much said it was a God thing that she got out of there the way she did, because she told me if she would have stayed there, it probably would have either got her back into the hospital or killed her from all the harassment and stress on her. And same with my aunt. She had to get out of there too. She was suffering from malnutrition from all the stress and harassment. She was like 30 pounds underweight.
Wow.
So
are they both okay now?
Yes, they're very okay now. My mom, she lives in Stockton now. She's renting a room, and she's really happy. And my aunt, she lives in Milpitas. She's renting a room. She's really happy, and she's getting her weight back. I think she's still a little bit underweight, but she's not as underweight as she was. But she's getting her health back. They're both focusing on their health and themselves and their happiness. And that's all that really matters to me with my mother and my aunt and my family. I want them to be happy and, you know, not stressed out and sick. So I'm glad that they were able to find places and focus on themselves after the stress and harassment from the HOA they endured.
So maybe in the long run, although at the time it did not seem like it, but maybe there was a silver lining to that particular cloud. They're in happier places. And you've done some research, and you've reached out, and you have educated people, and that's a really good thing that has come out of that as well.
Yes.
So I hope, and what's really good is that you're going to be a journalist one day, and maybe you'll go on and specialize in this arena of property rights.
Yes. Yes.
And harassment and abuse and how to prevent it from happening. Jessica, would you believe we're out of time? I want to thank you so much for coming on. I want to thank you for talking to us, for sharing your passion with us, and for taking this bold step and educating your fellow students. I urge you to continue doing so.
Thank you, and I want to thank you for having me on your show. This was very exciting time for me. This was my first radio show, and I'm glad I was a help for you and everybody else out there, I hope. And I'm really glad I was able to get my voice and my mother's and my aunt's voice out there and help people and educate people. And hopefully I can keep on doing that with this HOA and evictions story, like you said, you recommended me to do. So yep. I want to do that. So I want to stay on top of it. So for you and for everybody else that needs information on this, I'm really happy this made a circle, full circle like this. It's really, really crazy to me, actually.
Keep in touch, Jessica. Good luck.
I will. Thank you.
Thanks to everyone for joining us. Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.